This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend and partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have much to discuss in the NFL. We had kind of planned on doing this little fantasy football preview show, and then Andrew Luck retired. Antonio Brown has happened over the past month, and I just feel like we have a lot of NFL-related things
to talk about. Forget that Lamar Miller blew his knee out either, which is just devastating fantasy news.
Yeah, I mean, weeping and gnashing of teeth nationwide over Lamar Miller. So no disrespect to Lamar. Great player in his own right, but... Pipe, we will get into those things in a moment. I want to highlight our sponsor, Gut Check Press, with a new book on the marketplace called A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day by me, Ted Cluck. So the book is a collection of my essays, 80 essays covering sports, pop culture, Christian life, revisionist history of Gut Check. So if you're a fan of that podcast, if you're a fan of this podcast, or if you've just been a fan of my writing over the years, you will enjoy this book. You will find it at a small online merchant called Amazon.com. So if you go to www.amazon.com, Amazon, like the thing that's burning to the ground right now, the real thing, not the company.
I mean,
you can find my book there.
If Tim Challies had his way, the company might burn to the ground too.
Dude, totally. Challies. Yeah, that's right, man. Challies threw some shade at my new business partner, Amazon.com. So for now, you can find my book there until that crashes and burns too, and then you can find it at challies.com. Piper, let's get into this Andrew Luck retirement. So Saturday night, I was at the house with my buddy Matt. Matt is a great sports fan. We often watch college football together. He brought his wife over, and the girls hung out while we watched the first college game of the season, Miami versus Florida. Did you watch that one?
I did not. I was at one of the most Nashville events that I had, like of the good variety, not the variety we discussed on the last sports podcast that I have ever been to.
Dude, what was Nashville-y about it?
So it is called Songwriter Under the Star, Songwriters Under the Stars.
Oh my goodness!
Which sounds like a prom theme, except
except, Nashville prom theme,
right? But it wasn't. So there's a there's an old historic mansion slash estate that has been turned into a like a big park and grounds.
Yeah.
And once a year they host a music event called Songwriters Under the Stars. So it starts at 7:30 p.m. and runs till 10 or 11.
Uh-huh.
And it's the writers of all the hit songs, not the artists who actually performed them. So it's all these sort of Nashville legends who you wouldn't recognize walking down the street performing songs that you have heard famous people sing. Which is why it's Nashville. It's outside, there's like drink tents and food tents and people on blankets and chairs everywhere. But it's because it's at this old mansion, it's very sort of classy and subdued as opposed to like the woo girl party scene.
Exactly.
So I was doing that, not watching Florida Miami.
Interesting. That sounds like a nice event. So Florida Miami was a nice event also in that you could tell that the teams had only been at practice for like 2 weeks and that there were a myriad of fumbles. And
to be fair, Florida has looked like that for about 4 seasons. I think they've only practiced twice in 4 seasons. So
that's true, man. That's true. Light practice schedule of Florida. So somebody online had made the comment that it was like a game that was played in a monsoon, except there wasn't a drop of rain anywhere near the stadium. But sloppiness wise,
that's funny.
Like,
when you said Florida versus Miami, I just pictured in my mind torrential rainfall.
Yeah,
I don't know what the weather was. I just pictured it in my head.
Yeah. No rainfall, but lots of sloppy play at any rate. But somewhere around the third quarter, ESPN ran the big like red breaking news stripe at the bottom of their telecast. And the breaking news was that Andrew Luck was going to announce his retirement from the NFL. And it was crazy. We were thrown for a loop by it, immediately started hopping on our phones looking for more information. And I caught the last 10 minutes of his live press conference that he did right after the Colts game. And then I actually today watched his entire presser. And I got to tell you, it was one of the most likable, winsome, heartfelt, kind, gracious, like sports moments I've seen in probably the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. It was the kind of presser that like I wanted there to be more of it. Like, even though he was in agony and I wanted it to be over for him, like, I just wanted to hear him talking more, because I think he's really a guy that we're going to miss in pro sports. And being a Christian athlete and coach and dad myself, like, I was watching him going, I wish this is how all Christian athletes sounded, even though I don't think he's a Christian. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He was just the right kind of, to me, gracious, honest, heartfelt. And I liked him 1,000% more than all the sort of prepackaged Christian athletes that have been shoved down our throats for the past decade. So I wondered if you had any thoughts on it, Pipe. How did it strike you?
Yeah, I mean, every time I've ever heard him interviewed, or you hear journalists talk about interviewing him, he gets described very similarly to what you did, just sort of minus the spiritual aspect of things.
Sure.
Where he's described as brilliant, humble, likable, accessible. I saw a tweet thread from, what is his name, Michael, he's the creator of Parks and Rec and The Good Place. Is it Michael Schur? Mm-hmm. Michael, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
And he was talking about how when they were... Andrew Luck was on the set of, I think, Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
They were filming with the Colts for one scene. And he hung around with them for like 2 or 3 hours and was throwing passes and talking to everybody. And just he was just talking about how people who didn't know anything about sports, didn't care anything about the NFL, came away as a fan of him. And you just get stories like that over and over again. And you just get the impression that this is a different sort of guy than your sort of stereotypical star anything.
Yeah, totally. So, Pipe, what do you make of his retirement in terms of, obviously there's the implications for the Colts this year, but just the whole idea of a 29-year-old guy who's so prodigiously gifted just kind of deciding to walk away at this point. I know one of the things that, you know, being an Indiana resident myself, you know, not currently an Indiana resident, but I identify with Indiana because it's where I grew up. I was really disappointed to see that a smattering of Colts fans booed him after he walked off the field. So the news broke in like the third quarter of a preseason game that he was a part of. He wasn't dressed and wasn't playing, but he was on the sidelines, and the news broke and he was booed as he walked off the field. I was super disappointed, I guess. I thought Midwestern people were nicer than that. But
I heard somebody, maybe it was on the Ringer NFL podcast or something.
Mm-hmm.
People were just pointing out the fans heard the same time everybody else did. You know, it was via social media. So there's just sort of a shock factor. And so, of course, the first reaction is sort of, what is going on? And there's just, you know, there's sort of the visceral reaction. You know,
yeah, totally.
My guess is if he had not been at the game and he had shown up a week later, I don't know that there would have been boos, because there would have been a chance for him to address the fans, to speak about his reasons for it not to be, you know, the shock factor's worn off and maybe they could give him a send off. So,
there
it was disappointing because you want to see somebody like him respected.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of so surprising that it makes sense that maybe the fans were a little extra upset. My reaction was first just surprise, because you just don't see this happen. But as I was thinking about it, I was like, well, why not? You know, people switch careers all the time. People stop loving a thing they've been doing. Actors stop acting. Musicians move on to something else, or they try other things.
Sure.
I think we just have this mindset from the outside that, because everybody wishes we were a professional athlete, every fan harbors daydreams of being a fantasy or a professional athlete. And so for somebody to walk away from it without using up all their chances feels insane to us, because we would take one chance.
Yep.
But I just switched jobs at 36, which is the time you leave professional sports. But, you know, like, it's not a crazy thing to switch careers and move from a thing that you've spent a lot of time and energy doing to something else. People do it all the time.
Yeah.
Not to mention that the guy is always injured.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I heard another, I think this was definitely the Ringer NFL podcast. They said Ryan Grigson deserves a healthy portion of the blame for Andrew Luck's retirement because he's the one who built the team that got him hurt for his first six seasons.
That's right.
And that's a very incriminating statement or an indicting statement. But he has not been in a good situation until the last year, but it might have been too late.
Yep. No, that's right, man. I mean, he was the only show in town for a long time. I mean, they lacked a running game for a while. They lacked an elite receiver. They certainly lacked talent and depth on the offensive line. And you're talking about a guy who's very intellectually curious. I mean, I think he breaks the mold of the typical modern professional athlete in that regard. I mean, this isn't a guy who's grown up banging the drum of, I just want to play football, you know, or I love the game even. Like I know there were people online who questioned whether or not he ever loved the game truly, and they were using statements like that. And it's like, well, who cares? Like, show me somebody who truly like loves the game more than anything else, and I'll show you an imbalanced, like, you know, probably train wreck of a person at some level, you know. But those are the kind of terms, those are the categories that we expect out of our professional athletes. Like, he's gotta wanna die for this.
Right. And the idea of, you know, he doesn't have the grit to stick it out.
I don't buy that for a minute.
Well, it doesn't mean anything.
Absolutely.
The grit to stick it out applies to, so I'm listening to the audiobook of Band of Brothers right now.
Yeah.
Grit to stick it out applies to a circumstance like that, you know.
Sure.
You are in the Ardennes Forest in, you know, 1944, and you have to live or die. Okay, there's grit involved there. Deciding whether or not to take your millions and go do something that doesn't leave you bruised, battered, broken, and unhappy, I don't think that's a grit decision.
Well, or even if you're Adrian Peterson and you've made $100 million, but you've spent $110 million. Like, that guy's playing because he still has
Or paid 98 in child support.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it takes a certain amount of grit and determination to stick that out and keep going back. But yeah, for a guy with a Stanford degree, you know, a whole head full of ideas and diverse interests with a bank account full of money. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to justify, you know, continuing to get your body broken and beat up. And nobody can... I don't think anybody who hasn't walked in those shoes can't fully appreciate the kind of pain that he's probably in on a day in and day out basis.
I think he probably honestly deserves our admiration for.
I agree.
He was successful. He did put the team first. He worked very hard. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been as good as he was for some really bad Colts teams.
Yeah.
But he also left himself in a position to have the freedom to make a healthy choice when he felt the time was right, as opposed to being trapped into playing football until he's 42 or identifying himself solely as a professional athlete. He finished his degree. He did all these things that put him in a spot to kind of do whatever he wants. And he came from a place. I mean, he came from a kind of an elite family, so to speak, or a one with a lot of opportunities, but he didn't waste anything. And he's using the opportunities that he has.
He didn't waste any opportunity. And Pipe, I have one more question on Andrew Luck, and I'm not even sure how I want to say this, so I'm just going to start talking and see how it comes out. So you know, and I think we're of one mind on this. Like, we don't like the curated professional Christian athlete business.
Correct.
That's something that's been distasteful to us since we've been adults. And I got to tell you, though, and I don't know if you watched the entirety of his presser or just even a few minutes of it, but I watched his presser and I thought to myself, the thought that I had over and over again was, how can this guy not be a Christian? You know what I mean? How can somebody who's that humble and that gracious and who's speaking in that particular way not know Christ? But I don't think he does. I mean, is this just like a heaping dose of common grace leveled on, you know, one really blessed person? I wasn't sure how to take it. You know what I mean?
Or he is a Christian who believes that at some level that's a thing that, you know, you don't grandstand for, which I know would offend some people. But I don't have no idea what his faith, where he stands faith-wise.
Yeah.
It is an indictment to the public grandstanding, ego, airbrushed, faux-Jesus nonsense that so many celebrity Christians put on, often at long term, kind of at the expense of Christianity, because they publicly grandstand and then they also publicly shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's if he's not a believer, it's definitely what did you say? A heaping dose of common grace. That's a fair description.
Yeah, totally. You know, and he's never, like you said, he's never publicly outed himself as a Christian athlete. But I don't know. I just have to think that working with Frank Reich, who I know to be a completely stand up, humble, gracious Christian of the kind that we've been discussing, like that had to have rubbed off on him at some level. And it would be such a joy, I think, to play the game for somebody like that, you know, because it's such a rarity in the football business to run across somebody like that.
I will say this, it would be an absolute delight to find out down the road that he is a Christian and kind of have that "I knew it" sense about
it. Dude, I totally agree. Because
it's so rare to run across somebody whose character stands out so much that it makes you go, what's different about that guy?
Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome.
Even just a Christian athlete who you'd like to like be in the same room with, you know, just one of these guys that isn't smug and repellent, you know, would be a breath of fresh air. But Piper, let's talk about the football implications of this a little bit. The Colts were kind of a vogue pick to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. You know, you've got the kind of offensive genius factor with Frank Reich. You had T.Y. Hilton, Marlon Mack, some exciting guys coming back. Yeah. But Andrew Luck being
a good defense for the first time in a while.
Oh, sure. A good defense for the first time in decades. I mean, their defense was no good when Peyton Manning was there.
When Peyton Manning was there was like Bob Sanders, Dwight Freeney, and good luck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Robert Mathis, who they kind of stumbled upon and got lucky with. But really legitimate defense for the first time in decades. And now you take Andrew Luck out of the equation. You plug in Jacoby Brissett. Given what we know about the AFC South, like how bullish are you on the Colts at this point?
Man, the AFC South went from maybe the strongest division in football to just a bunch of question marks. Not in football, but maybe in the AFC.
Sure.
Because Houston lost their running back.
Yep.
Tennessee doesn't have a quarterback.
Yep.
Jacksonville has an offense that is TBD.
Jacksonville is very theoretical.
Yeah.
Right? Like Leonard Fournette staying healthy and being his old self. Nick Foles, you know, becoming the starter that we think he can be. A lot of theoretical.
I would not be surprised if Jacksonville was 6-10. I would not be surprised if they were 12-4. I mean, they had massive range of outcomes.
Yep.
Indianapolis should have probably mopped up this division, or at least won it with relative ease. Now they're more in the, I would put them in the Jacksonville category at this point.
Sure.
A lot of talent, but theoretical offense. Mm-hmm. At least they have skill position players, an offensive line, and a head coach who is also a good offensive coach. I remember when Luck was out 2 years ago, Brissett was surprisingly good, and that was with a bad offensive coach.
Yep.
So I think they could still be pretty good and, you know, playoff team, maybe win that division. I would probably pick Houston at this point.
Yeah.
Just because their skill position players and quarterback are so good, and they do have some pretty dominant defensive players.
Dude, vis-a-vis Houston, I actually think Duke Johnson is going to be better than Lamar Miller. I think that was a great trade.
I think Duke Johnson was always better than Lamar Miller. The question was he going to catch four passes a game, or was he going to touch the ball, you know, 14 times a game?
Yep. And now he's going to get his 14 touches, and you're going to see, you know, the real Duke Johnson, I think. But
I think Houston ought to be talking to San Diego. Nope, not San Diego. Los Angeles. Sorry, Chargers fans.
That's okay.
A trade for Melvin Gordon. Yeah, that
a buy low on Melvin Gordon. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I mean, at this point, I mean, unless there's cap implications that I don't understand, because I don't understand the salary cap at all. That just seems like Houston is primed to run away with the division if they can solidify that running back position.
Dude, so I know a lot of people, as soon as the Andrew Luck news broke, ran to their computers and placed a bet on the under on total wins for the Colts before, you know, Vegas had a chance to adjust the lines or whatever. I actually think, you know, given what we've said about the division as a whole, I mean, if Jacksonville goes south, The Titans, we know, are not going to be any great shakes, given their lack of a quarterback. I actually think a Jacoby Brissett-led Colts team could still make some noise in that division. He's not Andrew Luck, but he's not bad.
Yeah, I think they have the potential to be a 10-6 team.
I do too.
Which in that division, it could be second by two games, because Houston might be really, really good, or they could be vying for the division lead. I think Brissett will be solid. I think Reich will put him in a position to succeed. I think the fact that this announcement came down with 2 weeks prior to the season, and Luck hasn't played at all, so Brissett's been getting all the first-team snaps. Mm-hmm. I heard somebody go, well, this is awful for the team that he announced it now. No, it's not.
Yeah.
He hasn't played with the team since last year.
Exactly.
So their backup has been running with the starters. It's bad from maybe drafting a quarterback or something like that, but they're going to seamlessly transition into the season in terms of scheme and offensive players being used to each other, et cetera. So, yeah, I think Indianapolis still could win 10 or 11 games.
Dude, can I say one more Colts thing? And I want this on the record right now. A player who I'm going all in on, because I had some interaction with him when he was in high school, believe it or not, but I've always admired his skill set, and he's back on the field with the Colts, Chad Kelly. Chad Kelly looked awfully good in their preseason game the other night.
You loved him when he came out in the draft, too.
Dude, I did.
He was your late round sleeper, which I thought was a great choice, because he was really good in college before he got hurt.
Beat Alabama twice when he was at Ole Miss. You know, the kid has no conscience when it comes to, you know, making a mistake and bouncing back. Live arm, great athlete. A little bit erratic off the field. You know, that's kind of the drawback that you're going to have with Chad Kelly. But if he can keep his nose clean and kind of be, a somewhat stable person off the field, I think he has a chance to really make some noise in the league. He's still young. I think the Colts, it's one of those backup choices, Piper. And there seem to be two schools of thought on this, right? Like if you're the Oakland Raiders, for example, your backups are Nathan Peterman and Mike Glennon. Not exciting. You know, you've seen the best of what those two gentlemen have to offer, and there's not exciting.
I think you meant I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. Those are terrible names.
So given that as a choice, like, why wouldn't you roll the dice on a Chad Kelly, somebody with like next level kind of an insanely high ceiling, but somebody for whom the floor has admittedly been pretty low because of off the field stuff. But you figure if that goes right, you know, you're getting a blue chip type player for pennies on the dollar. I don't know why you would go with, you know, a Nathan Peterman over somebody like that.
Yeah, it seems to me that backup quarterback should be one of two things. Mm-hmm. They should be, say you are New Orleans, for example, and you are a Super Bowl contender. You have Drew Brees, who is exceptional but also old. You want a backup quarterback who, if he goes down, your Super Bowl chances decrease as little as possible. So a stable backup.
Yep.
Ergo, Teddy Bridgewater. Although, what's the other guy's name who's sort of their...
Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill. People are saying he's probably their actual backup quarterback. But he's a good example of the other thing backup quarterback should be, which is the like wild card, change of pace,
high
ceiling, roll the dice. Yeah, crazy things can happen when he's on the field. That guy. And I don't know why people like Nathan Peterman have a job in the NFL.
It's fascinating.
He's a bad backup and a bad starter. Unless he's just exceptional at breaking down film or something.
Well, dude, Detroit's in the same boat, right? So Detroit, if Matthew Stafford goes down, they're going 0-16. Like, they are absolutely going 0-16, because the rest of their quarterback room is Tom Savage and Josh Johnson, who's been a career like just being camp guy for like a decade. Again, no disrespect to those guys, but it's like, how can you not have a better contingency at that position given some of the guys that seem to still be out there? You know what I mean?
And as discussed last year, the name Josh simply will never be a greatly highly successful NFL quarterback. Yes, you've got a few who are there's some potential out there, but I just don't see Josh as being Super Bowl winners. That's not
Josh
a name.
Is not a Super Bowl name. No,
it's not.
And we're going to talk about Josh things later.
To be fair, Tom Savage is a Super Bowl name. He is not a Super Bowl quarterback.
Tom Savage is a Super Bowl name in the 80s, and unfortunately it's 2019.
Fair. That's fair.
You know, but Tom Savage in the 80s, that guy could do no wrong.
Actually, Tom Savage sounds like he sounds like a local news broadcaster. You know,
that's right.
News at 6 with Tom Savage sounds like a show that yeah. would have been featured in the Twin Cities when I was growing up.
Tom, back to you in the studio.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, Pipe, let's talk about idiot behavior. Let's talk about wide receiver idiot behavior. And I want to know for you where Antonio Brown's training camp ranks in the pantheon of all-time idiot wide receiver behavior. So, just by way of a recap, we had not only the cryogenic foot freezing incident, in which Antonio Brown froze the bottoms of his feet off in a cryogenic chamber.
That is not, that's not a, an exaggeration. He actually froze the bottoms of his feet all the way off. They were disgusting. I saw pictures.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself. I told myself I wouldn't look at the pictures, and then I looked at the pictures, and they were real bad. Somebody, I think the best quote was, his feet look like the Declaration of Independence. So just like a really old, crinkly, gross document that's existed for...
That's a great line.
Yeah, for all kinds of years. So, and then on top of that, he makes a huge deal out of not wanting to wear up-to-date, you know, certified helmet tech. He wants to wear the old helmet that he has been wearing ostensibly since college. So, Piper, what do you make of this in the pantheon of idiot wide receiver behavior? I think it is the Raiders doing Raiders things, which is going all in on a guy, you know, far past his prime. Although he has played well when he's been on the field.
I was going to say, I think he scored 15 touchdowns last year and caught over 100 passes. So he's not young, but he's not bad.
Yeah. But the fact that he's with the Raiders, I think, like, is going to diminish his output by at least 30%. What do you make of this?
I think the only receiver in history who competes with him on the idiot scale is Terrell Owens.
Yeah, I was going to say that was where I was going.
Because there are some others who fall short in a couple categories. So let's think of other idiot wide receivers.
Chad Ochocinco is Chad Johnson.
Yes. He was much more of a self-promoter idiot than he was a like locker room cancer idiot.
Yeah, he wasn't so much a hurt the team idiot. He was just a kind of a distraction at
worst. Yeah, he just, you know, he did crazy celebrations and he changed his name to Ochocinco and things like that. So also, he was never... He was a really good wide receiver. He was never best wide receiver in the NFL. So I think that sets you apart, too, a little bit. Randy Moss was a diva at various points. I think he was a different class of diva as well, though, because all of his teammates liked him, that I recall. He just was frustrated that he was better than everybody else oftentimes. Mm-hmm. Like when he went to... when he went to
Marshall,
Oakland, whatever, like wherever they were playing then, he just quit because the team sucked and he didn't want to play with that garbage team. And then then when they traded him to New England, he decided, oh, I get to play with elite people and I'm going to go show that I am the best.
Yeah.
But he definitely had his moments, you know, shooting the ref in the back with a water bottle, fake mooning the Green Bay crowd, which, by the way, is my favorite touchdown celebration of all time.
Yeah.
What else did he do? There was a whole incident where he hit a crossing guard with his car in some instance. And then he was real loud, mouthy.
And kind of surly.
Yeah.
He wasn't a sort of, you know, cuddly, we love this guy idiot like Chad Johnson. You know, Chad Johnson was a likable idiot.
And yet, here's the thing about Randy Moss. He finished his playing career and moved straight into a studio job where he is really good and people like him.
He is one of the most interesting like PR reclamation projects in the history of sports media to me. That whole thing is stunning. And really, tip of the cap to him. He's done a great job.
So who else do we have? I mean, going back in the day, there was the Michael Irvins of the world.
Michael Irvin was like a snort a mountain of coke and get arrested with prostitutes kind of idiot.
Yeah,
so that's a different category.
It's also a different era because there was just less, like, it was very fuzzy about the people kind of knew but didn't know. It was kind of like steroids in the 90s.
Well, dude, it was pre-social media, right? Yeah. I mean, you had like bits and pieces of rumors about this guy's behavior, but all you knew was that on Sunday he was bringing it. You know, he was, and he always brought it. He was a great competitor. And look, they all complain about the ball, right? Like every receiver wants the ball all the time.
Speaking of idiots, Keyshawn Johnson, you know, you know, I think he titled his biography. I don't know if we're allowed to swear on this, but this is the book title. So please don't yell at me, everybody. It's just called Give Me the Damn Ball.
Dude, one of the great wide receiver idiot like sports biographies of all time.
Also, he's right up there because he overrated himself so much.
Absolutely.
Which is
anointed
special.
Himself like the second coming of, I don't know, whoever the great receiver was, Jerry Rice at the time, you know, before he played a snap of NFL football.
Yeah, and he was really just a glorified possession receiver. Kind of, right. he would have been a great sort of move tight end today because he was your
classic like big receiver who couldn't separate. You know, he was the Marquise Colston of you know whenever his era was actually probably not even that good. Keyshawn Johnson was a great one. Are we forgetting who are we leaving out?
Dude,
one of my favorite like likable idiots was Joe Horn.
Yes,
wide receiver New Orleans Saints who low key had some great. End zone celebrations of his own back in the day. I think he was the first one to like shove the cell phone into the padding behind the goalpost and make a call when he hit the end zone. I think that was Joe Horn, wasn't it?
Yep, that was him. That was what he. And I mean, he was a good receiver too. He had some years. I think Brown goes down though as the most. He and T.O. are the most sort of cancerous of these.
Yeah.
In terms of. Every team they were on did not want them. The fact that the Steelers just let walk a guy who has been the best receiver in the NFL by production for 6 years.
Yep.
And they still have a shot at being competitive in the AFC as long as Roethlisberger is healthy. Now, I picked them to be bad this year, but if everything goes right, they're a good team. And they let him go. They didn't even try to re-sign him. They never offered him an extension. They didn't franchise him, nothing. And they're all happy he's gone.
Yeah.
That says something when the best wide receiver in the league walks out the door and nobody's crying that they lost 100 catches and 15 touchdowns.
Exactly.
So I think, man, how unlikable must he be to just be around?
Oh, dude, I know. I know. It's going to be fascinating. So what's your wins over under for the Raiders? Like, what's your over under on their number of wins?
Man, over under. I would set the over under at
six.
You have to go halves, 6.5.
Yeah, 6.5. Boy, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be comfortable saying that they're going to get to 7 wins. I don't see it. I'm not a Derek Carr guy. I don't trust Antonio Brown to play 16 games. I mean, we're going to talk about fantasy in a minute. I would not pin my fantasy hopes in any way, shape, or form on Antonio Brown.
And we have zero reason to believe John Gruden knows how to coach at this point. So
yeah, dude, I've not been impressed with their draft choices in the preseason. Granted, it's preseason, so you got to give that caveat. But you know, Cleveland Farrell does not look like a sudden, you know, game wrecking NFL pass rusher, as is worthy of the. You know, the fourth overall pick.
Well, that was one of the confusing things to me is that every one of their defense of their draft picks was that they wanted these workhorse character guys from successful programs. So they got Farrell from Clemson. They got Jacobs from Alabama. Just like going on down the line. But then they go out and sign Antonio Brown and Richie Incognito.
Yeah.
Who is hands down... the least likable player in the NFL, setting aside anybody who's been involved in domestic abuse. Although he may have been involved in that. I'm not sure. I know he was involved in various hazing incidents. There has been bar fights. There has been like arrests for punching people. Nobody likes him.
Interesting choice, man.
He's
really
solid.
Interesting choice. Yeah. Yeah. Piper, let's talk fantasy for our last couple minutes together. You and I are in a fantasy league together. We started it for our listenership. It was a service for our listeners, also to give us content for Happier in Sports
and to make your life a little more miserable in the fall.
To make my life miserable in the fall, which it absolutely did last year. You brought me out of fantasy retirement for the first time in like a decade to play fantasy football, which I hated. I think almost every minute of, but for some inexplicable reason, I like really wanted to. have it happen again this season. So I don't know what the psychology is.
I know what the reason is, and it's because your son's in the league too.
Yeah, my son's in the league, so I wanted to do it with him again. And it's a keeper league, so I got excited about some of these keepers, Piper. So I want us to walk through our list of keepers, talk through the rationale of why we kept that player, and then any other fantasy thoughts we have before we wrap the show. So have you selected your keepers yet?
I have. So for listeners' sake, and not to get too much in the weeds, we did an auction draft last year. So there's dollar values attached to the keepers. So you can't just you can keep up to five players, but it costs you their auction value from last year plus five auction dollars. So yep. You're not just weighing talent; you're also weighing value. So that's an important piece of who's a good keeper or not.
Yep.
So you know, in the spirit of competition, I probably shouldn't tell you who my keepers are, but it doesn't really matter at this point. So, I'm trying to remember who I kept. So, I decided to keep Adam Thielen, yep. Zach Ertz,
ooh,
Chris Godwin,
mm-hmm.
and I might have kept one other. I might have kept Cortland Sutton. I can't remember.
Dude, so who's your highest priced guy in that list? Was it Zach Ertz?
No, it was Adam Thielen.
Thielen, that's
so
right.
So Thielen cost me something like $24 or $26 in the draft last year, so he'll cost me about $30 this year, which mm-hmm. for a guy who I would guess is going to be a top 15 to 20 wide receiver this year is about right.
Sure.
Ertz, I'll keep at $24 or $25. I don't think he'll get 116 catches again, but
nope.
If he gets 90, that's still probably a top three tight end, and
dude, he's top three at his position for sure. So yeah, that's not too steep for that kind of production.
And then Godwin, I'm keeping at I think $6. So yeah. I don't know that he'll be great, but he's sort of a flex player. He costs me next to nothing, and with Bruce Arians going in there, I think so. Last year he put up 59 catches, 840 yards, and 7 touchdowns. I mean, mm-hmm. If that's 79, 50, and 8 this year, yeah. or same number of touchdowns, for $6, that's a good value. The guys who I didn't keep, T.Y. Hilton,
yeah.
Dalvin Cook, who I love, but I did not want to pay $50 to keep him because that's a quarter of our budget. Totally. Lamar Miller, that yep. was before I knew he blew his knee up, but now I'm glad I didn't keep him. And then Amari Cooper, because I can't stand Amari Cooper because he puts up all of his stats in one quarter of the season, and you don't know which quarter it's going to be.
Exactly. No, he's very Derrick Henry-esque in that regard. So speaking of Derrick Henry, here are my keepers, Piper, and I did not keep Derrick Henry. My keepers are Philip Lindsay, who I think I'm keeping at $6. I think I got him for $1 last year. He was the Denver rookie sensation, rushed for over 1,000 yards. I think he had 7 rushing touchdowns last year. Just good value, even if he's in a job share a little bit with Royce Freeman. I think the cream will rise to the top in that backfield, much like it did last year, and it will be Philip Lindsay's backfield to lose. Next keeper is George Kittle, who I think I acquired from you in a trade. I think I sent you Godwin and Gronkowski for Kittle and maybe somebody else
yep.
at some point this season last year.
I had Kittle before he completely blew up because the first quarter of yeah. last year he was decent but not amazing. The yeah. last three quarters of the season he was just bonkers.
Yeah.
I made the Gronkowski gamble last year and it completely yep. tanked my season. I bet on Dalvin Cook and Rob Gronkowski in trades and
yeah.
neither of them paid off. So thus the fact that neither of them are on my team this year.
Understandable though, man. Understandable. Don't beat yourself up over that. So I'm excited about George Kittle. I think he was quite cheap, so he was quite a bargain. I don't think I paid more than $10 or $11 for him to keep him. So Lindsay at $6, Kittle at $10 or $11. Josh Allen. So I've got a lot of Joshes in my clubhouse this year. So I kept Josh Allen. He's a $6 keeper. You know, Josh Allen's one of these like boomer bust guys where anything can happen on any play. It could be
also,
great. It could be bad.
This is it's a super flex league. So that means you start one quarterback and then you have a flex that you can do any position at. So it can
That's
be
right.
a two quarterback league. So if Josh Allen does what he did in the last half of last year,
yeah.
you have an amazing second quarterback.
Absolutely. And my first quarterback is another player who I'm excited about. Another $6 keeper, Lamar Jackson. I'm bullish on Lamar Jackson, on the Ravens, on their offense. I'm excited to see what they do with him in year two. So I have a very young quarterback room in Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And I may, depending on how the draft shakes out, I may try and pick up a more kind of stable, conventional veteran. But yeah, I'm excited about those two, man. And they were both really cheap. My last keeper is another Josh Gordon, wide receiver, New England. This was a total like emotional pick just because I like Josh Gordon, because I like New England, because I think the ceiling on him is still really high if his head's right. He was my most expensive keeper. I think it was $17 to keep Josh Gordon in the fold, which if he cranks out, you know, his the higher end of his production will be a bargain.
He played what, 7 games last year, something like that?
Yeah. And he was good.
And that was without sort of any, there was no preseason. It was kind of just, he was a late addition.
Yeah.
And I think worst case scenario, so assuming he plays say 14 games, you're going to get a 1,000-yard receiver who gets you 7-8 touchdowns because Brady loves him and trusts him right out already. And
absolutely,
they don't have good receivers besides Edelman at this point.
Yeah, they don't. There's a lot of opportunity there with Gronk moving on and, you know, just some uncertainty with the other positions besides Edelman. So some of the guys that I was bummed to leave on the table, Lynn Fournette, the price tag was just way too high for him, and especially after his performance last year. But I am bullish on Jacksonville and on that offense kind of bouncing back, and on Lynn Fournette bouncing back. So I was sad to leave him on the table. Another Josh Rosen. I do think Rosen will win the job in Miami. I think they're a year or two away from being a competent grown-up offense, just given the magnitude of their rebuild. So I was a little bit bummed to leave Josh Rosen on the table. Matthew Stafford is just one of those sentimental ones for me. I think Detroit is a ways away too. So it was going to be cost prohibitive to keep him.
I think you probably would have kept him at what, 25 or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, so I was puzzling out whether or not I should keep any of my quarterbacks, who are all garbage, by the way. But Kirk Cousins, I would have kept him at $19.
Sure.
So, which is not a bad value, but I just realized I can probably get Kirk Cousins at $19 in the auction again if I want him.
Yeah.
Or for $14. Less. Yeah. And that's,
yeah, exactly.
See, and that's why, so Dalvin Cook, Amari Cooper, T.Y. Hilton, Kirk Cousins, these guys are all worth having on a team, but I can probably get them for less by re-auctioning as opposed to adding $5 to their value and keeping them. It's that adding $5 is great for your $1 and $3 players. It's not great for your $20, $30, $40 players or for those middling guys.
Dude, so the one guy I hated to leave on the table, and that's a good segue into this, was Julio Jones, who I got in a trade last year. So I traded Baker Mayfield to a friend of mine who needed a quarterback. He was desperate for a quarterback, and he's a Browns fan. So so I sent him Baker. Maybe there were some other guys in the deal.
Goodness, but it was basically every rookie quarterback.
Dude, I did. Yeah, I bought them all for $1 at the end of the auction draft last year, figuring a couple of them would pop, and they did. So anyway, I sent him Baker for Julio, which I felt at the time was a really good trade for me. I was like, man, I'll do that all day long. Except that it's cost prohibitive to keep Julio because this guy paid like $60 for him in the auction last year. So it would have cost me like a third of my budget total to keep Julio Jones. So that made it an easy choice, but still hard to take the best player at his position and leave him on the table.
Yeah. So it's an interesting, I've never done a keeper league quite like this where I've done salary cap leagues and things like that, which I don't recommend unless you want to just spend an ungodly amount of time investing in fantasy football.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
this league will always, the top players will always go back in the draft because you'll spend $40 or $50 on them in the auction, which is a fair price.
Yeah.
But you don't want to spend $45 or $55 next year. And if you keep a guy 2 years, instead of going up $5, it goes up $10. So over the course of 2 years, their auction value goes up $15. So for somebody like Josh Allen, that might be worth it because
he
might
still be
this year and
16
next year. And maybe at 16, you go, you know what? He rushed for 800 yards. He threw 25 touchdowns. It might be worth it. For somebody like Adam Thielen, it's not going to be, because he cost me 25 last year. He's going to cost me 30 this year. I'm not spending 40 for him next year.
Right.
So if you want Adam Thielen, wait till next year or trade him, you know, trade for him. So it's, it keeps things churning, but it makes the value of late round guys, rookies, or your ability to spot those real sleepers. It adds a lot of value to that. George Kittle is a good example. I doubt, what did he probably cost? $8 in the auction last year or something like that?
Yeah, he was something like that. He was $7 or $8. So he's going to end up being, you know,
12 this year. And if you want to keep him next year, 22.
22.
That's fair, especially if he puts up another 1,200 yard season or something.
Dude, for arguably the best player at his position, yeah, it's more than fair for sure. Pipe, in closing here, do you have players, any deep sleepers that you really love, or players that you really like, players that you really dislike in fantasy this year?
Let me think. I dislike quarterbacks, just all of them, and in keeper leagues especially. So I hate trying to figure out when to draft quarterbacks, period.
Yeah, yeah.
Young guys are overvalued in keeper leagues. Now, the way you did it, you sacrificed a year to have value this year. That's why they suck, because you lose a year.
Yeah.
I have another league that is going to be – it's a keeper league that just started – and everybody was going young guys, so I took Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers.
There you go.
Because in something like the 8th and 9th rounds.
Nice.
Which I feel great about, but next year both those guys might be retired. So
absolutely.
I don't like quarterbacks in general. I hate drafting them early or paying a lot for them. I think,
dude, in a league like that, you may want to hit the waiver wire and just grab like a, I don't know, the kid from the Redskins, or even a Daniel Jones or whatever.
Well, I picked up Matthew Stafford in like the 14th because nobody likes him. And I also don't like him, but the value is too good. And he's going to be their starter for 5 years unless he, you know, something tragic happens or he pulls an Andrew Luck. So,
dude, and he's going to throw the ball 40 times a game because they're going to be behind.
Yeah, although they keep, you know, with what's his face, the bearded mountain man of a coach they have there, Matt Patricia. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what their offense is going to be. But anyway, he's my third quarterback. It's not that big of a deal. The running back position is really frustrating to me because it used to be that there were top 10, 15 running backs. Now they're sort of top 4.
Yeah.
And then the Philip.
Everybody else is in a job share.
Yeah, the Philip Lindsays of the world, the rookies of the world who may pop or may not. There's just a whole bunch of that kind of thing going on. So, and you get these situations like the Patriots who have Sony Michel, but they also have
Damian Harris and Rex Burkhead and the guy who catches all the passes.
James White, really their second wide receiver. And, and you got Miami where you've got Kenyon Drake and Kalen Ballage, both of whom are fairly talented, but also stink in fantasy. And so forth. Kansas City, where who's the running back? I don't know. It's probably a timeshare. Oakland is probably going to run Jacobs into the ground. So if
he's actually a sneaky good pick, man.
I got him in that other keeper league, and you know, you and I might be going head to head in this auction for him this league because all my keepers are wide receivers and tight ends, which means I need to go heavy on running backs.
Totally.
So it's a weird thing to be in fantasy now because of how the game has changed to such a passing league where no running backs get 20 carries a game anymore.
I hate it.
It's, you know, and even some of the top running backs, David Johnson, Saquon Barkley are on really bad offenses. So are they going to be great, or are they going to be guys who get the ball 18 times a game but can't do a lot because their team stinks? So Todd Gurley's injured or might be injured, or who knows what he is. There's not a lot of reliable players at the running back. It all feels like a gamble to me, which makes this year really interesting.
Totally, man. Pipe, I got to take care of a little bit of business here before we wrap the show. This last Sunday at church, man, let me paint the picture for you. And you're a man of the cloth now, so you'll appreciate this.
I am. I was also at church this last Sunday.
So church wraps, and I see this woman make a beeline for me across the congregation. So she's like weaving her way through traffic, and she comes and gets right in my face, and she goes, "I don't appreciate how much you and Pipe make fun of the Titans." So Kim Lancaster, if you're listening, I'm sorry. So I apologize on behalf of the show for how much we make fun of the Titans. And I think, Piper, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we do it because we want to like the Titans. I mean, we both live in their TV viewing area. We want the uniform to be better. We want the team to be better. We just want it to be a better viewing experience. So I think our criticism, we're sort of like a harsh mid-century dad as it pertains to the Titans, in that we're criticizing probably a little bit too much, and we're doing a little too much tough love, but we really want them to reach their potential.
That's right. If they ever get a B, we're going to look at them and go, why didn't you get an A?
Exactly.
And
if B's good enough?
Yeah. That's not good enough in this household. That's 100% correct. There are teams that I abhor. Anytime I make fun of the Packers, that is pure loathing. Just plain and simple. No bones about it. The Titans are absolutely – and what kills me is I watch what has happened with the Predators, a hockey team, a sport that is –
the least Nashville-y sport.
Yeah, it's not remotely Nashville. It's at this point it's barely American. You know, it's a Canadian and Swedish and Russian and European sport. It's kind of like international soccer where the fans are super passionate, but it's not in the United States. It's pretty sort of closeted.
Yeah,
but the Predators are a huge deal in Nashville.
Yeah,
and the Titans just can't be. They cannot figure out how to be interesting. And it kills me because I don't need another team to root for. I have a home team, but every Sunday I would love to watch a great product. It would be so much fun to watch a fun team with talented players and a coach who knows his head from a hole in the ground, with uniforms that don't look like postal workers. Just anything. What's her name? Is it Kim?
Kim.
So Kim, we mock because we know they can do better. It is not a matter of hatred. It's a matter of, come on, guys.
And we want them to do better. We really do, man. We're pulling for them. We're rooting for them to do better. And we think they're capable of it, but we just want to see them do it.
I think I'm done rooting for Marcus Mariota, though. I don't think I'm rooting for him anymore. I think.
Dude, see, Mariota, like, I have a spot in my heart for him. I'm still rooting for him in that he just seems like a really decent guy, a really great guy, almost like Andrew Luck level guy in terms of, like, just a guy that you can't hate. You know, he just seems like a really good
guy. Oh, I don't hate him. I just don't think he's a good quarterback. And I was speaking purely competitively when standpoint. I say I'm not rooting for him. I don't. Sure. I suspect that he's a wonderful person, and I've never heard a negative story about him. I think he was a great college player who might be. He's sort of the ideal backup quarterback, is what he is.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And Piper, I have one more apology to make, and this is to my Canadian friend, Chris Harwood. And I don't know, does it move you forward, like, social media-wise? If I was to be photographed with my Canadian friend, I don't know. I don't feel like that's a thing social justice-wise, but maybe if it is, I can get a photo op with Chris.
Sponsor a Canadian?
Sponsor a Canadian, absolutely. I've got a little magnet of him on my refrigerator at home.
Pen pals.
Yeah, write him letters every once in a while from time to time, but... No, Chris is a diehard fan of the program, and he has been troubled by our lack of CFL content lately. So I feel like I need to get back on the Manziel Minute train, even though Manziel has long been out of the CFL.
Yeah, see, and Chris, I don't feel the need to apologize specifically because I was always just a bandwagon Manziel fan. I'm not a bandwagon Manziel fan. I'm a diehard Manziel fan who was bandwagon CFL because he was there. So, that said, I might need to get into it just for the sake of watching. But
dude, and see,
next season.
I'm a real CFL fan, and right. I would like to invite you to get into it, Piper, because I think it's refreshing. I think you would enjoy it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the Montreal Alouettes doing almost a Cleveland Browns-esque turnaround this year, in that totally new coaching staff. They fired their GM in training camp. And they've got a little win streak going here, and I'm excited to be an Alouettes fan now. But Piper, we have done what we always do.
Do you have time for one more quick thing? That it's a topic near and dear to our hearts,
of course,
and that is uniforms.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. So let's talk uniforms.
Let's pivot to a different sport. This last weekend, at the time of recording this, was what Major League Baseball called "quote unquote" Players Weekend.
Oh my gosh, dude!
And they stuck the players in stormtrooper costumes.
Yep.
Or trash bags, or something that is black and white and plain and just ugly as sin.
Dude, no, I didn't watch multiple games. I watched the Mariners play a couple times this weekend, and
in which
if
case
I'm not
you
mistaken,
watched every team across the majors.
I was
going to
say every team was in the same black and white uniform. It was just the crappiest thing imaginable, Piper. And they tried to dress it up by, like, you know, letting the kids put their nicknames on the back of the uniforms
which
and stuff.
Is great.
Which,
and the custom cleats and, like, those things are fun. Like, so
they are.
So when we did our MLB least favorite and favorite draft thing, MLB marketing was on my least favorite list for those who haven't listened. This is why.
Yeah.
Because they have an opportunity to be cool and fun and awesome. And instead, here's what happened. So I make a regular habit. I follow a number of MLB accounts on Instagram. You know, so there's like Pitchers Nation and Glove Work and whatever.
Yeah.
Where it's just highlights, you know, it's 30-second highlights. Yeah. I can't tell who any of the highlights are of unless I recognize the guy's swing, because you can't see the numbers, you can't see the team logo, you can't see the team name unless you recognize the stadium and the, like, the body language and the posture. Mm-hmm. Then you don't know who's playing. And so I was watching highlights on Glove Work, and there was, you know, it was one where they posted three or four videos. I didn't know who any of them were except for Javi Baez, because I recognized Wrigley Field, and then they did a close-up of his face. So MLB on Players Weekend managed to make every player look exactly the same so that none of them stand out.
Exactly. No, That was so bad, man. It was so, so bad. And hopefully that's the last time we'll see that particular set of uniforms, Pipe. I feel like they just got a deal on, like, black and white jerseys, and they just ran with it. But yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah,
it
feels like a situation, you know, where, speaking of mid-century, where mom gets a good deal on a bolt of plaid fabric, and so every kid in the family gets a new plaid suit or dress or something, and it's all matchy-matchy and ugly. That's what it felt like.
Dude, I could see the MLB brass at, like, Joanne Fabrics picking out the bolt of just drab black and white fabric and like... the commissioner sitting over by the fake fur, and one of them sitting, like, flipping through the pattern books, and you know, and yeah, just a gong show, man. Really bad uniform weekend. I'm glad it's over. I'm really glad it's over.
I know it's going to be so refreshing to tune back into a game and go, oh, look, blue uniforms.
Exactly.
With
color.
Gray pants. Yeah, color. This looks so good.
Color is a nice thing, man. It's underrated. You don't know how good it is until it's gone. So, Chris Harwood, apologies for the lack of CFL content. Piper, we have done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Kim Lancaster.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hello, hello, Quinice Petway here, co-host of the Your Daily Bible Verse podcast. Are you someone who loves to take a deep dive into God's Word, one verse at a time, to explore His will for your life and desire to draw closer to Him? If that sounds like you, I'd love to invite you to head over to lifeaudio.com and search Your Daily Bible Verse to tune in and subscribe for daily inspiration, life application, and spiritual transformation through the in-depth exploration of God's Word.